Let's turn our attention briefly to the question of the Jewish approach to this issue. Talk briefly about some of the issues here. What should be the halachic approach to this? What should be our attitude, let's call it hashkafa, an orthodox Torah-based approach to these types of things? Unfortunately, this is a necessary discussion because, as you become apparent in our discussion, we're now entering a phase where there's been around us, in the non-Jewish world, a falling off of vaccination, and of course echoed among us in our community as well, unfortunately, and now you see the effects of that are the epidemic of measles which faces us, and possibly also other epidemic diseases which may also, or very likely to happen if this trend persists. What is the Jewish approach to this? First of all, let's make it absolutely clear that it's an obligation to immunize children. Let's make one prior observation, and that is, this is really not a Jewish or halachic question. Let's make that clear. This is a medical question. You should not be asking your rabbi about a medical question like vaccination of children. There are aspects of vaccination that are rabbinic questions, halachic questions. I'll try to explain what they are. But the risks involved in the disease and the risks involved in the vaccination are really not something you ought to be asking your rabbi. You know, if there's something wrong with your car and you have to have the brakes fixed, you don't ask your rabbi, you go to your mechanic. Right? When there's a polio epidemic or a measles epidemic or the question of vaccines, you ought not to be asking your rabbi. And any rabbi giving an opinion on a medical matter when that rabbi is not medically trained, that is seriously incompetent, right? Negligent and possibly even criminal. Right? You should be asking your doctor about your, as Rav Asher Weiss said recently in a shiur on vaccination in London, which is very, very vehement about the obligation to vaccinate, he made the point that the people who should be making the decisions here are your doctor, and on a community basis, it's the Department of Health, right? The Misrad HaBriyot in Israel, with all the political, you know, machinations and all the political intrigue and all the distrust that we sometimes legitimately have of the political system, right? That is the direction from which the, strange though it may sound to us, that's the direction where this may happen. You don't ask your rabbi about fixing your car, you ask your mechanic, and you should not be asking your rabbi about a medical question like vaccination of children and the dangers that epidemics pose and the countervailing dangers that the vaccines pose. It's a totally medical question. There are halachic questions, let's be clear about that. Such things as exactly how much of a redef, if you want to use that word, an infected child is, how much of a redef, if you want to use that word, or an aggressor or pursuer is a child who's not infected but is vulnerable to infection? To what extent can a school exclude children? I'm not going to comment on that. To what extent is a danger posed by the unvaccinated? Can a school exclude children because it has cancer sufferers among them, or children who are vulnerable, children through no fault of their own or their parents' fault may be vulnerable? These are questions that have genuine Torah components. That's one area that you should be asking your rabbi, or indeed your rabbi's rabbi, because these are questions to be made on a community basis. It isn't only for a senior rabbi to be deciding about you and your family or guiding you in your decision. It's also something that needs to be made on a community basis for many reasons. First of all, as I've explained at length, vaccination is a community effort. Secondly, the name we get as a community when the outside world perceives us to be pockets of infection, right, and we leading, as always, leading the charge of anything new and falling off in our vaccination rates for primitive concerns, right, which are really not medically based at all. And then we perceived in a world that is all too easily becoming anti-Semitic, looking at us and saying we are unwilling to cooperate and pull our weight in society. That has community consequences, and that, of course, is something for senior halachic opinion to weigh in on. And there are many other areas as well. HPV vaccine, for example, right, which is now rolled out among all youngsters, given to all school-aged children. That is a halachic question. Human papillomavirus, that's a virus that is sexually transmitted, and it's 100% associated with cervical cancer, right, cancer of the cervix. Every single case of cancer of the cervix, you can find the papillomavirus there. And there's no doubt that this is a causative relationship. And so in order to prevent women getting cancer of the cervix, kids before they become sexually active are vaccinated with HPV? That's a halachic question, right? That is a vexed issue. On the one hand, we don't want to give our children a vaccine that is not necessary. Of course, no matter how safe it is. Any doctor will shy away from any medical intervention or procedure that is not necessary, no matter how safe it seems to be. And therefore, we don't want to give our children an unnecessary vaccine. So we'd much rather not do it, and we have a lifestyle that doesn't engage in the danger, doesn't encounter the risk of sexually transmitted diseases, and therefore we'd rather not do it. On the other hand, our religious society is very clearly fraying at the edges. We have many youngsters now, small proportion, thank God, but nevertheless a definite proportion of those who are so-called going off the derech. There are those who certainly will become infected. And that is a weighty question. Do we vaccinate everybody to protect those girls from getting cancer of the cervix who unfortunately, inevitably, no matter what we do, are going to get it, admit defeat, so to speak, and do that to protect them? Or do we take the moral high ground, not give the vaccine, which of course we'd much rather not do, and yet know that we're condemning a certain amount of our young people to getting that sort of cancer? This is a question that needs to be decided by halachic authorities at the very highest level, and so there are many questions that are appropriate for our rabbis to weigh in on. When there's a clear danger to community, when you're dealing with a vaccine that is clearly dangerous, there is room to discuss this question halachically. I recently sent a question a couple of months ago to Rabbi Zilberstein, asking him about a dangerous vaccine, right, without belaboring all the details. I had the privilege of being part of his shiur to doctors in Israel for many, many years. I still get the transcripts of those shiurim now that I live in London. And if you look through his five-volume shiur Torah for doctors, L'Roifim as it's called, you'll find my name a few times there, I'm proud to say, for various questions that I've sent to him through the years that have been interesting enough to make a public shiur to the doctors, which he gives once a month. And a couple of months ago, I sent him two related questions. One which is not of direct concern to us to now, which is concerning self-driving cars. As you probably know, the automated cars coming online now will have to make programmed decisions about who dies in the event of a choice. If the car's going down the road and there's somebody unavoidably in front of the vehicle, should it kill the occupant or should it kill the person in the road? What if there's 10 people in the road? Should it kill the people in front of it, the car? Should it turn aside and kill the occupant? Should it turn to an uninvolved bystander on the side and kill one? That's a fascinating question. What is the morality of the choices that are being made today by cars that are being programmed in such a fashion? And there's a fascinating tshuva that he wrote on that, quoting the Chazon Ish on this very question. And that's a fascinating issue, which I unfortunately not time to go into now. And the second question I asked him was also a question about danger to a minority in terms of danger to a majority. 10 people in front of the car, turning aside and killing one to save the 10. The medical question was concerning the dengue fever vaccine. This is not a question that concerns Americans at the moment, but in Southeast Asia and some parts of South America, there's a dengue disease, which is a serious infection. This is not an epidemic disease, it's a mosquito-spread disease, so no question of being spread from person to person. But the facts about the dengue vaccine are that the dengue vaccine, as it's called, is a very effective vaccine. But the problem is, the figures are these. The figures are that for every million children exposed to the vaccine, if you expose a million children in Southeast Asia to the disease, about 11,000 of them will be very seriously affected by the disease. Right, very seriously affected. About half of them or a third of them will die. Others will be permanently affected. And if they're hospitalized, very seriously affected. If you give a million children the vaccine, then you will virtually prevent the infection of the dengue fever. However, about 1,000 children will suffer serious damage from the vaccine. Right? Let's be clear, this is not like polio, this is not like measles. This is a vaccine that has a definite, it's only 1,000 out of a million, okay, but that's far, far higher than the complication rate of the vaccine like polio or measles. And therefore, the authorities in countries like that have to make a decision. Do you expose a million children to the disease and watch 11,000 of them succumb? Or do you expose a million children to the vaccine and watch 1,000 of them succumb? Well, the calculation seems to be obvious. 11,000 seriously harmed unless you give the vaccine, and 1,000 only harmed, less than a tenth, right, of those affected from the vaccine. And I asked him the question of what should be done, and he was very clear in his chiva, and he gave a public chiva about this, that it would be an obligation to immunize. In fact, he said, it's much clearer obligation than programming a car to turn aside and kill one in order to save 10. There you're killing one person on the side, endangering the person on the side to save 10 other people. In the case of the vaccine, he pointed out, what you're doing is you're giving a person a danger to save him, not someone else, from the danger. This child has 11,000 out of a million chance of getting harmed by the disease, and if you give him the vaccine, you're giving him a 1,000 in a million chance of being harmed by the vaccine. But in the course of giving him that risk, you're preventing a 10 times greater risk from the disease. And therefore, no question, society has the right to do that, and it ought to be done. So that was a question that I asked him in the context of vaccination. He's been very, very clear that children need to be immunized. Let's just summarize. We've said already that the question of vaccination, the risks of an epidemic, the risks to individuals, and the countervailing risks of the vaccine are really medical questions and not rabbinic or halachic questions. It's a very important point to remember. As I pointed out, you don't ask your rabbi about fixing your car, even though when you have your car's brakes fixed, your life depends on it, and the lives of others as well. Nevertheless, you ask an expert in the field, you ask your mechanic and not your rabbi. And therefore, this is not a halachic question. The basic question of vaccination, I try to be clear about where some of the halachic and Torah opinion questions are relevant. The second point to know is that when you are asking a rabbi or a rabbinic opinion, first of all, a very basic point here is that one, of course, needs to learn to think for oneself. Das Torah and having a Rebbe doesn't mean you don't think. One of the things Rav Moshe Shapira was very clear in teaching us was that the point of Torah education is to become a powerful and independent thinker. Hemiru Talmidim Harbe, raise many disciples, Rav Moshe used to point out. Hemiru means stand them up. Stand them up means stand them on their feet, not yours. An invalid guru is a teacher who makes his disciples dependent on him. A valid spiritual teacher is one who makes his students independent of him. And therefore, of course, you need to do your own thinking. Of course, you need to be informed to do your own thinking. If you're not informed, you speak to an expert. However, when consulting your Rebbe, your rabbi, getting rabbinic opinion in the areas of vaccination and other medical things where Torah opinion is relevant, of course, we have a very, very clear way of proceeding here, and that is that we choose to go with a consensus, particularly where there's an overwhelming consensus of opinion. Let's be clear about this. What is the rabbinic opinion today? What is the so-called Dias Torah today about vaccination? There's no question that there's an overwhelming international rabbinic consensus that this is a life and death, a very serious life and death question. There are a number of themes of motivation here. One is Ushmati Ma'adla Nafsha Sechem. You have a Torah obligation to guard your health. This means desisting from things that are dangerous and actively engaging in things that are protective. If you'd like to hear an analysis of some of the specific halachic obligation points here, you can listen to Rav Asher Weiss's recent shir given in London, where he goes through some of them. There's a review of vaccination obligations by Rabbi Bleich from 3 years ago. You can read that. There are many sources you can reference here. There's no question that the overwhelming opinion of rabbinic decisors here is that it's a very clear and very important individual and community obligation to immunize children, certainly against the major risky epidemic diseases that we've discussed. It is true that there is a minority of opinion that is not keen on vaccination, that either insists that it should not be done or more moderately does not insist that it should be done. To the best of my knowledge, there are two well-known Torah personalities who take one or other of those lines. How do we handle such a minority opinion? Incidentally, it's important to know that in the medical world, there's also an overwhelming consensus of expert medical opinion that vaccinations are a very clear obligation. highly irresponsible not to do that. I personally know one senior London pediatric consultant who feels that parents who do not immunize their children should be charged with second degree homicide, or at least they should be charged with reckless endangerment of lives in their care. Okay, that's an extreme way of putting it. I also know pediatricians who refuse to allow unimmunized children into their offices. Of course, they're doing that to protect the vulnerable children that they need to deal with. This is not me to say, of course, that they wouldn't treat those children, but they wouldn't let them into the environment where other susceptible children are, whose lives will depend on being protected from contagion. So we have in the medical world an overwhelming consensus regarding the standard immunizations. Again, I'm not getting into HPV and other ones where I think there are some dubious points and discussion is needed. Nevertheless, even in the medical world, there are one or two fringe opinions that are against vaccination, one or two vocal pediatricians and others who've written books about this and have large practices of anti-vaccination people who discourage people from vaccinating children. How do we approach that? Well, the medical world approaches them as fringe, even unbalanced and completely invalid opinions. But again, even if there would be reason for what they're saying and considered reasons with evidence, nevertheless, we do not accept a minority opinion, and clearly, halakhically, one is obliged to accept the majority of opinions, a very basic halakhic principle. And I'm talking here about the halakhic principle of accepting a majority on technical matters. I don't mean a majority in Torah matters, that's another issue. Let me be clear what I mean here. It's a very basic principle of medical psak. You'll find this in many tshuvas. Let's say two doctors disagree about, let's say we have some dangerous procedure that needs to be done, or a debate whether it should or should not be done, or which procedure should be done. And let's say you have two senior, highly competent medical opinions that disagree on this issue. And then you go to your rabbi, and you ask him, what is the correct option here? Now, the rabbi is not a doctor. He's going to be advised by the medical opinion. And here you have a 50-50 split. A very basic procedure that will be followed by the Pesach is to ask for a third opinion. He will want a majority on one side against the other. And of course, what will happen is if you get an equally competent third opinion, then you will have two doctors on one side, one on the other, and that is a majority of technical opinion that the Pesach will give very strong credibility to. Of course, it can be more subtle than that. I'll tell you about a fascinating case I was personally involved in, about a patient a number of years ago, while Rav Yashiv was still with us, where there was a question of a particular heart operation, and two very senior experts in the field disagreed about which particular heart operation this patient needed. And these two great experts, in their humility, decided to get a third opinion. These were two world-class cardiologists, and they were disagreeing about a particular cardiac procedure. They decided to get the opinion of a third cardiologist who happens to be world famous, someone they both look up to, someone who is known as an international authority that clearly by their own admission is senior to them. Now, these two doctors, their opinion happened to agree. Perhaps I said that incorrectly. These are two doctors, two senior personalities who agreed about a procedure but wanted to defer at least to hearing the opinion of a senior colleague. And of course, you can guess what happened. That senior colleague disagreed. So we had a situation of two senior cardiologists wanting to do one procedure. This is an acute life-saving procedure. The senior, the person senior to both of them disagreed and thought a different procedure should be done. And I was consulted as to what the correct procedure was. I asked Rav Eliashiv. This was an emergency situation. I was able to get to him immediately. And Rav Eliashiv told me that the patient should make the decision. Very, very interesting. The patient should make the decision. The question I put to Rav Eliashiv was, what takes precedence in halacha? A majority of medical opinion, highly competent, or a minority of senior, superior medical opinion, right? That's a very interesting, playoff between those two sides. Do you go with the two doctors who are highly acknowledged in their field who agree, or do you go with the one doctor whom they both agree is senior to them, but with whom they disagree? Rav Eliashiv said, in that situation, the patient should get to decide. Of course, there's very good reason why the patient should decide, not just because it's a 50-50 standoff, but because the patient's motivation and commitment to what's going to be done is very important to his recovery. Anyway, the patient chose. As it happens, the patient chose the chose to go with one option. He chose to go with the option of the majority in that particular case, and he did very well. And that's an instructive situation. So a medical majority is very relevant in practical terms, and of course it is relevant halachically. So doctors all over the world, even though there's always medical disagreement, and even on a clear issue like vaccination, you will find one or two outliers, and the medical world will disregard them, particularly in a case like this where the anti-vaccination doctors are extremely rare, and so we'll go with the majority. Now, when it comes to Torah opinion, we certainly function that way. So let's say there are two, at least best of my knowledge, two well-known rabbinic names, rabbinic leaders of this generation, who are reported to be not as keen on vaccination or perhaps anti-vaccine. Exactly how strong their opinions are, I'm not sure. But even if they're very clear about this, there's no question that we follow a majority. Again, this is not a personal issue, and of course we have no right to be disrespectful. When you're talking about people with an established record of Torah leadership, we look up to them, we respect them as is due, of course. Nevertheless, one does not follow their opinion when you have the vast majority of senior halachic opinion around the world telling us that they are making a serious error. Not just a serious error, a serious life and death error. Now, of course, you're talking about highly intelligent, competent people. No doubt they have their own approach to this issue. And if you're interested, of course, feel you should obviously discuss it with them. I would say if you're a personal Talmud, if you're a personal disciple of a person who has that opinion, even if he's against the majority, by all means discuss it with him if you're committed to that individual and you take all your rulings from him, not just, of course, a convenient one like this because it suits your own medical, holistic or anti-vaccination intuition. Then, of course, you go and discuss it with him, and between his advice to you and your decision-making, you will have to come to your own conclusion. That is clearly the procedure over there. Not, by the way, that you have to follow him blindly in everything that he says. On the contrary, if he's a really worthy salt, he will want you to develop your own dice in these areas, particularly with the technical issue at stake here and not a Torah principle. So let us give respect to genuine Torah leadership that is clear about something that is unpopular, that is a renegade, tiny minority opinion. Nevertheless, we don't follow that with all due respect because we have here countervailing, if indeed this is a matter for rabbinic opinion, we certainly have a vast majority of opinion here telling us what to do. It is a tragic mistake to put one's own personal vested interest or intuition at the forefront here when you are not technically educated in this field. Let's stop for just a moment and talk about that. Again, I don't wish to speculate about the anti-vaccination movement. Fascinating question why people take that view. If you'd like to see an interesting review of this, New England Journal of Medicine about 2 months ago had a review of the anti-vaccination situation, the alarm with which this is being viewed in the social and sociological and medical world. And then explored some of the issues that lead people to be anti-vaccination. And of course, like in all of these things, there are elements of truth in that position, no question about it. One of the elements of truth in that issue, in that area, is people's allergy and skepticism about the medical establishment, about the political establishment here, which is behind vaccinations, against the pharmaceutical industry. And of course, there's truth in all of that. We know that the pharmaceutical industry has been guilty of terrible misconduct, there's no question about that. These are isolated incidences, but nevertheless they're real. We don't need to speak further about the political world's incompetence and immorality. There's no question that there are aspects of truth, and that is partly what leads people to have these opinions. The opinion becomes almost automatically against anything that the pharmaceutical industry says, or indeed the medical industry. We know that the medical world is incompetent in many areas. We are inadequate in treating many diseases, no question about that. We know and we readily acknowledge that medical procedures and interventions are not perfect. We know they have side effects. That's also an element of truth. We admit freely, of course, that vaccinations are not perfect and have side effects. There's no question about that. The Ramban, who was a doctor himself, points out that every medical procedure has a danger. He puts it quite sharply. He says that what heals one kills another. All right, you cannot say it more cogently and succinctly than that as a doctor. Nevertheless, that should not be taken to extremes. There is something in the modern personality And again, if you look in that review, you'll find that and a number of other motivations behind the anti-vaccination campaign. There's also a modern feeling of naturopathic or holistic type medicine, which rejects technical interventions, likes things to be natural, prefers the body's own natural healing powers to be brought to the fore. And of course, even the most technically minded and scientifically trained of modern doctors agrees with that in principle. Only, as we pointed out, the problem is there's a very high cost of doing that. As I try to make clear, if you allow a community to develop its own polio immunity, that works brilliantly, but the cost is very high because children will be paralyzed and die along the way. And therefore we choose a different way of doing these things. One of the things that also relevant here, and this is a uniquely, or I would say particularly, American problem, is that when you have a majority, a consensus, as we've been discussing, you have a consensus of medical opinion, certainly, and unfortunately, even sometimes when you have a consensus of Torah opinion, there's a very clear favoring of the minority. This seems to be an American issue. I'm not an American. I can't claim to understand it fully. But I think it may have something to do with the frontier mentality, the lone ranger syndrome, the lone hero who goes against the majority. And of course, again, we have to acknowledge the truth of that. There are many situations, and medicine included, where a lone renegade has gone against the system, in fact, and turned out to be right. In fact, one of the ironies in the vaccination story is that the early pioneers of vaccines like Salk, Dr. Sabin, Dr. Hillman, the Jenner himself in 1790, one of the ironies of the vaccination story is that they were lone rangers who went against the system and it turned out to be right. And they're, of course, now represented by the majority, so that's an irony of the situation. In fact, this has gone so far that there are many circumstances where the individual going against the majority is almost, by default, assumed to be correct. What people tend to forget is that for every story where a renegade went against the majority, right, and showed them and bucked the trend and turned out to be right, and left the majority finally ashamed of their mistake, of course, those are great rarities. Right? As we said before, the default position from a logical, scientific, and Torah point of view is that we go with the majority. And for every renegade who goes against the system, right, there are many, many situations in which the renegade was just that, an outlier who had a unique opinion and turned out to be thoroughly wrong. And by the way, this is not a lack of intelligence. One only has to think of a person like Linus Pauling, who was a Nobel Prize winner, if I'm not mistaken. He won 2 Nobel Prizes. He was tipped to win a Nobel Prize when he was 30. At the age of 30, he was beyond a genius. He won the American Chemical Society's award when he was 30 years old, at which time he was tipped to be a Nobel Prize winner. He went on to be one of the most brilliant scientists of the age. And no one can accuse him. He was no intellectual slouch, that's for sure. And yet Linus Pauling developed a fixation on the value of vitamin C and taught that very high doses are necessary. He was highly educated in the field, Nobel Prize winning scientist and chemist. And he went on to make claims that vitamin C would prevent the common cold and other infections. And of course, all the research proved him wrong. And despite all the research and all the evidence against him, he continued being that renegade lone ranger, railing against the system. And of course, was proved thoroughly wrong. He also developed a feeling that vitamin C would prevent cancer. And he took it in very high doses and insisted on his wife taking it in high doses. Ultimately, they both got cancer. He saw his wife die of cancer. He himself got cancer. And when his contemporaries asked him what his feeling was about the vitamin C and his own cancer, he said, and this is typical of people who take this type of a line, he said, it would have been worse had I not taken the vitamin C. Right? This is an amazing, amazing thing. Again, a great genius. But once a person gets fixated on seeing his thing a certain way, you see everything that way. Now, this is a very, very powerful and well-known Torah theme. You'll see Mefoshim bring this out with the brothers of Yosef, is that even though Yosef gave them every conceivable clue as to who he was, I mean, they heard his voice, they saw his face, Rashi says he had a beard, but you know, that's a very poor disguise. He demonstrated that he knew their ages and who they were. He kept asking about his father. I mean, there was no stone he left unturned to clue them in as to who he was. The Medrash even says that just before he disclosed himself to them, he said to them, I know where your brother Yosef is. And they said, where? And he said, Yosef ben Yaakov, enter. The Medrash says the brothers looked around, where's he going to come from? And finally, when he revealed himself to them, even at that point, they still could not acknowledge. And in case you think they were not thinking about him and they'd forgotten, that's not true. We know that they came into Egypt looking for him. And despite facing him and being a person they were searching for, and with every possible clue, face to face, they could not bring themselves to see something that they were not ready to see. Nifhalu miponov, it says in Mefarshim, say they were terrified or they were shocked at his face. His face, meaning the face that they'd been staring into all this time. When you can be a Linus Pauling, you can be a genius. Once you see the world a certain way, you are not going to change. And by the way, that's why I would suggest that it's fruitless to argue with extreme anti-vaccination personalities, because very often they have taken a line here where they're very, very thoroughly convinced that they're on the side of the holistic and the natural, and they're clearly superior. And I've had no success personally in trying to argue with people who take such an extreme line. And it's a global position, by the way. Certain rabbis speaking to me recently opposed to the measles vaccination, and as the discussion broadened, it turned out he was against all vaccines, even things like tetanus. Right, so it was not just although he began the discussion with me on the basis of the figures, the facts and figures and the technical statistics about measles, nevertheless it became rapidly apparent that his argument was not based on those statistics. His argument is based on a naturalistic, holistic approach to medicine, which eschews and rejects any medical intervention. And he clearly was of the opinion, even in the midst of an epidemic, that it's better for children to get ill, even if some will die, because his feeling is that we do more harm by giving the vaccine, and tries to make a case in showing that the harm is actually balanced either way if you look at the statistics, and therefore it is better to take the natural and suffer that harm. Of course, this is an extreme detachment from objective reality and against the consensus of Torah opinion and the consensus of medical opinion, but that seems to be where the personality is now. The great distrust of the pharmaceutical industry, the great distrust of some aspects of the medical world, combined with this renegade feeling of independence and an American characteristic of individual freedoms and self-assertion, and no doubt many other variables as well. I personally think that some of it is based on a meritorious feeling about naturalistic and holistic dealing with the body. That is true as well. And a lot of that is valid, and yet we get into a position of extreme illogic and anti-scientific position, which makes us look absolutely primitive and plays into the hands of our accusers, when the Jewish people are supposed to be Rak Am Chacham V'Novin. It's Torah value and principle to be projected in the non-Jewish world as intelligent and enlightened. And of course, unfortunately, that is not happening. Let's take another angle here from a Jewish point of view, and that is that one is obliged to do that which is normal. Let's speak about this briefly as well. One is obliged to do what is normal. Apart from majorities and consensus and the scientific logic of what we've been speaking about up to now, this very important principle. Let's try to establish this from a halachic and Torah hashkafa point of view. First of all, you know that a nice way to approach it is like this. Rabbi Victor Miller was famous for putting it this way, but you'll find many sources that say this. One is obliged to do what is normal. And a nice way to show it is this. You know, the Torah says, Rapa Yerapeh, one should certainly heal. And the Mefarshim all ask, why does the Torah have to give us an injunction to heal? Is it not obvious that if someone is ill, we should be healing such a person, trying to heal? Well, the conventional explanation is that if Hashem provides an illness, if Hashem causes an illness, who are we to interfere? And so the Torah comes to tell you that that is wrong. We do indeed need to interfere. But there's another nuance in that mitzvah, which is very important to appreciate, and it's this. I have to understand this well. It's a very, very central feature of the modern medical approach as condoned and validated by halacha. And that is that when a person is ill, the Torah gives you authority to go and get healed. That's all very well. You go to your doctor, the doctor prescribes a certain medication, and you take the medication. But wait a moment. Where's the Torah authority for that particular medication? Indeed, you go to your doctor. The Torah authorizes that. Indeed, commands it. Commands the doctor to heal. Commands the patient to make the shtadlus of seeking healing. But who says this particular operation, or this particular intervention, or this particular medication that your doctor is giving you is valid from a Torah point of view? In addition, we know that virtually every medical procedure and therapy is shown after a few years to be invalid. Right? Let's admit that fully. I can't think of a medication that isn't, go back in the history of medicine, and you find that things that were taken as absolutely standard and in the best therapeutic tradition, 5 years later, 10 years later, were shown to be absolutely harmful and even criminal. And that is a repeated phenomenon. There's no question about that. We can say with virtual certainty that any medication that is given today in 5 years or 10 or 15 years' time will be shown probably to be invalid and very likely to be completely invalid and maybe even become criminal. Except for setting a broken bone, you know, and making it straight and waiting for it to heal, where you're using the body's own healing powers, I can hardly think of anything. You only have to go back 50 years in medicine, not even that, 30 years, and examine the procedures and medications that we've been given to be absolutely horrified by their invalidity and even their harm. There's no question about that. So the question that raises is, you go to your doctor, he prescribes a tablet. The Torah doesn't validate this tablet. Torah validates your doctor in making an attempt to heal you, but the Torah doesn't validate this particular medication. And you know that this medication is only the opinion of a doctor or medical establishment that's giving it to you now. And furthermore, you know that in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, it will almost certainly be shown to be irresponsible. Here's where the Torah says, "Verapa yurapa." Your obligation is to do that which is normal. I can't stress the importance of this enough. You are obliged to take that tablet, or that medication, or that antibiotic. You're obliged to do it because the Torah says, "Verapa yurapa," and what it means is a normal and valid ishtadlus. The normal ishtadlus, the normal effort you have to make in this field, is the best. Is the best medical therapy that is agreed by the consensus of experts in your day. The fact that it turns out to be irresponsible 5 years later is not your problem. On the contrary, Hashem will heal you through this tablet that you're taking now. And if he doesn't heal you, it's because you weren't going to get healed anyway. And 5 years' time, when information comes in that tells us that that tablet or that medication or that procedure is invalid, it becomes invalid. This is called Shem Epsoim Hashem. The Gemara has a number of examples of this. Shem Epsoim Hashem means Hashem protects those who are innocent, or simple, or straightforward, however you want to translate that word. That is the meaning of this. In other words, when you ask the very valid question, what tells me that this particular form of chemotherapy, or antibiotic, or any other medication I'm taking for this condition is validated by Torah? After all, the Torah does not mention it at all. And after all, medical history shows us that these things change with time and become exactly the opposite of what they were thought to be before. Here the Torah says, "Verapa yurapa." This, and Shem Epsoim Hashem. The Torah is indicating to you very, very clearly, make a normal ishtadlus. The healing does not come from the tablet anyway. It comes from Hashem. But you are required to undertake medication. The Rambam says in one place that taking a medication is as natural as taking food. Of course, he's referring partly to the fact that virtually all our medications come from the plant world. Today, of course, they're synthesized, but virtually every one, you can count on one hand probably, medications that come from the animal world or other sources. Virtually all our medications come from the very natural plant world. Fascinating question. In its own right, the Baal HaLeshem talks about that, about why the human body is affected by plant substances. At least a reference to something along those lines. There's not enough time to go into it now. But the point is that you are required to make a normal and valid ishtadlus. What is that? What the consensus of expert opinion is in your time. So let's talk about that briefly. What is considered a valid ishtadlus? And the answer is conventional medicine, certainly, for all its problems and all its unwanted side effects and all its disasters and all its changes of heart and changes of mind as time goes by, there's no problem with that. You are doing it because it's a normal and valid ishtadlus. You do not put your faith in the little white tablet or the chemotherapy anyway. You put your faith in Hashem, but it requires you to make ishtadlus, just like you have to make ishtadlus to get married, you have to make ishtadlus to earn a living, and you have to do it with a schizoid intention. You are going and doing your job thoroughly and responsibly, even though the earning, the living comes from someplace else, comes from Hashem. The Rambam says the doctor should stand back from the bedside, remind himself that whatever he does here to the patient is completely irrelevant. The patient's destiny is only in Hashem's hand. And then the doctor has an obligation to step forward and treat the patient as if every breath depends only on him. That is our schizoid approach to ishtadlus. You go and earn a living, do it responsibly and do the job well, knowing that the money does not come from there anyway. You take a healthy ishtadlus, you take the medicine. You take the medicine, you utter the prayer that the Rambam recommends. You say, "Yehi ratzon milfanecha Hashem, may it be your will Hashem, that this tablet, this medication I'm taking should be a healing for me." In other words, I know where the healing comes from. It comes from you. But I am required to make a ishtadlus. Now, what's a valid ishtadlus? What is broadly accepted in your time and place? And conventional medicine, for all the skepticism we have about a lot of it, and for all its poor track record in many areas, and for all the dishonesty of the pharmaceutical industry, and for all of those things, it remains a valid ishtadlus. What other forms of treatment are valid ishtadlus as well? Is homeopathy good enough? Are various other alternative medicines and theories good enough? Well, if they're broadly enough accepted and they have enough evidence behind them, and again, this is a difficult area to discuss in detail. I don't want to get into a detailed discussion about homeopathy and various other alternative and holistic therapies. You need to be making a broad and valid ishtadlus. The Rambam adds in some contexts here that it must not only be broadly accepted, it must also have scientific validation behind it. By that, the Rambam means validation of experience. Of course, the standard for that today, the modern standard for that, is a controlled trial, a very important to understand. And here we need to talk briefly about anecdotal evidence. Many people from the holistic and naturalistic, naturopathic world and various other alternative forms, they come along and they say, well, I know a person who had this particular problem and he used that particular technique and he got better. That sort of information is useless, absolutely useless. There are many diseases that get better anyway, right? We have no idea whether the anecdotal experience of a person taking one particular therapy had anything to do with the cure. Of course, it might have. But that does not consider that not constitute a valid ishtadlus. The modern standard today, and of course you can see the logic in this, you need to do a broad study that isolates the effect of this particular treatment. And today we do it with sophisticated statistical analysis. You need to take 1,000 people who have a particular condition and 1,000 people who are identical, matched detail for detail. You give them the one sort of intervention, they give the other one another one. And by the way, the group that does not get the intervention needs to have a placebo intervention. There needs to be no discernible difference between the two. And then you need to show that 100 of the 1,000 who took the non-active drug got better, and 500 of the ones who took the active drug got better. That is very suggestive that the drug is having an effect. So you need to, anecdotal evidence that you went to a therapist who recommended you take this type of therapy or that type of therapy, one experience is not good enough. That association is not necessarily causation, as I've tried to explain at great length. Association or correlation is not causation. And therefore, one needs to think a little bit more sophisticated way, what forms a valid ishtadlus. Bottom line for now, this is not an opportunity to discuss alternative and holistic procedures and medications. That's a subject for another time. Let's suffice to say at this point that modern medicine, again, with all its admitted deficiencies, is a valid ishtadlus, and vaccination certainly is in that category. But let me repeat this point because it's the key to our whole discussion, probably of everything we've discussed. This is the most important point, and that is to remind you that it is not the medication or the alternative medication that heals, it is Hashem who heals. Nothing could be more basic than that. If you're a Ben Torah, a religious Jew, observant Jew, that is the main thing to keep in mind. Not to get head up with the technicalities and the details, although they're important as well. They're important as ishtadlus. We have to make a responsible effort, but not to forget where the healing comes from. All the medical interventions are no more than ishtadlus. Of course, one needs to be responsible. There is a discussion about how much ishtadlus is appropriate, the balance between that and bitachon. These are all valid things, but this is a very empowering and calming thing to know, right? One is not obliged to run around the world looking for alternatives or extremes or unproven therapies, dangerous ones or ones that are not dangerous. This is not required. It's a failure in Hashkafa when a person does that. One is required to make a basic and standard ishtadlus of high quality, fully responsible, and that is all one is required to do. To seek alternatives and experimental things is absolutely not required halachically. Sometimes it's permissible. If you'd like to see the parameters of that, you can look in my book, Dangerous Disease and Dangerous Therapy in Jewish Medical Ethics. There you will see a full discussion of all the parameters and all the criteria laid down by Rav Eliashiv and others for undertaking experimental therapy. But the basic thing to remember, and again, I emphasize this as the key, is that this is not a question of descending to the pettiness of personal arguments, arguments ad hominem, arguments about the technicalities of various types of Mishtadlus, conventional or alternative. We should, as Bnei Torah, be above that. We should never forget we're dealing with Hashem. That's where the real effort needs to be made in Talmud Torah, observance of mitzvahs, strengthening ourselves in Emunah B'Tochen, not descending into the pettiness of a world that has forgotten where the genuine reality is. Maybe just a little story, if you permit me, might just bring this home. There's a story about two groups of Hasidim who lived in a particular town. And in that town there was somebody who was ill, very ill, and everyone was very worried about this person's survival. And what happened was one of the rabbis, the rabbi of one of those two groups of Hasidim arrived in town, and so the Hasidim went to him and they said, "Rabbi, please, you have to intercede on this person's behalf. Do something." And the rabbi was known as a miracle worker, and the rabbi did whatever he did, and the person did not recover. There was no obvious change. The rabbi left town, and a few days later, the rabbi of the other group of Hasidim arrived in town, and they went to him and they said, "Rabbi, you have to get involved, please, you have to intercede. This person's very ill, please work one of your miracles." The rabbi did whatever he did, and there was no obvious change either. But some days later, after both rabbeim had left, suddenly the person made an astounding recovery. Well, of course, you know what happened. A big argument erupted in town. Which rabbi was the one whose interceding had worked the miracle? And so they waited, the Hasidim waited till one of the rabbeim returned to town, and they all went to him together. They said, "Rabbi, you have to tell us, please enlighten us. Was it you who cured the patient, or was it the other rabbi?" The rabbi said to them, "You know, the truth is, it was neither of us, it was Hashem. But unfortunately, he doesn't have too many Hasidim." The next point to know is that one is also obliged to do these things. When it becomes a normal thing to do, one becomes obliged to desist from things that one should desist from, according to the consensus, and also do things that one needs to do. Let me illustrate this with a personal story. When I was in medical practice in Israel, again, I used to ask my questions to Rav Eliashiv. So here's an example that I think illustrates this very clearly. I was in practice in medicine in Israel. I had a family, myself and the other doctor in the practice. We had a patient, a family, who refused to immunize their children. Not refused, they were into holistic and naturopathic treatments. They were very, very firmly convinced that vaccinations would reduce their children's immunity across the board. They were against antibiotics. And, of course, they did not want us to immunize their children. I was very motivated as the doctor in the practice to try to immunize all the children in the community. And I entered into a discussion with the father on that particular occasion. The discussion boiled down at that time to the whooping cough vaccine. Pertussis, whooping cough, again, without going into a deep discussion of that disease. It's not a viral disease, but it's an infectious disease, can be very serious disease. And we have a very effective vaccine. Today we have a very good vaccine. Back then, during Rav Eliashiv's time, the vaccine was subject to a small risk itself. At least the prevailing opinion was that the vaccine was not entirely safe. That was admitted and known. If you gave the children the vaccine, you would effectively, very, very effectively prevent them from getting whooping cough. But 1 in 20 to 40,000 children given that vaccine would have serious, sometimes very serious neurological damage. And that was a risk of the vaccine. So I'm discussing this with the father, and he tells me, "Well, why do you want to give my child a vaccine?" I said to him, "Because there's a great risk of an epidemic. Your child getting whooping cough, it has a certain mortality. Of children under 1.5 years old who get whooping cough, 2 to 3 to 4% of them die. And they die in a miserable and agonizing death. And that is, there's no question about that. They're at risk for that. And so we give the vaccine." So he said to me, "Well, what's the risk of the vaccine?" So I said, "Well, look, it's well known that this vaccine is not perfect. It has a 1 in 20 or 30 in 40,000 chance of causing serious harm." So the father said to me, "Well, look, you want to give my child a risk of 1 in 40,000 of neurological damage. What are the countervailing math? Let's do the math. So I said to him, "It's very clear. If we have an epidemic of whooping cough and your child gets the disease and they're under a year old or under a year and a half, they have a 3 to 4% chance of dying. That is far, far greater than the 1 in 30 or 40,000 chance of being harmed by the vaccine." And as I said that to the father, I realized that what I was saying was completely inaccurate. Completely inaccurate. I was misrepresenting the situation completely. And the reason is obvious. The reason is that the true facts are these. If I give his child the vaccine, I'm imposing with my own hands on this child a risk of 1 in 40,000. If I do not give his child the vaccine, his child is at zero risk of getting whooping cough. Absolutely zero. Why? Because as long as everyone else in the community is immunized, there will be no epidemic of whooping cough, and his child will not get it. That's a very interesting question. So on the one hand, I can impose a risk, a definite but small risk on his child of the vaccine, or I can protect his child by giving his child no vaccine. Child will be completely safe, and his child will be safe from the disease as well, because everyone else has taken the risk of the vaccine. But that's a classic ethical dilemma. That's a moral challenge. Is that fair? So we decided to ask Rav Eliashiv. The father was totally happy for Rav Eliashiv to make the decision. And I'll never forget the experience. I and the other doctor in the practice, together with the Rav of the community, late one night we went into Rav Eliashiv and we put the question to him. And without any hesitation, Rav Eliashiv told us, it is permitted to force the family to immunize their children. Rav Eliashiv did not mean to hold them down physically. He meant to issue a psak that it's a definite obligation. They are obliged and required to immunize their children. On the way out of Rav Eliashiv's room, this sticks in my memory very, very clearly, I turned to the Rav and I said to him, just in passing, on leaving, I said, surely the Rav has said that because it's not fair. It's not fair for one person to ride on the risk of everyone else. In fact, Rav Asher Weiss makes this point very clearly. He says very clearly, it's indeed unfair. If you feel you'll save your child from the risk of a vaccination because you think it's too risky, or because you have some naturopathic intuition against this, and you want to do it, and you ride on the fact that everyone else immunized, it's a very unethical and unfair. So I turned to Rav Eliashiv and I was my natural assumption. I said, surely the Rav is saying that because it's unfair. Rav Eliashiv said to me, no, I'm saying you need to do it because it's normal, not because it's fair or unfair. Immunizing children today is normal. He said to me, you as a doctor, he said, looking at me, he said, you as a doctor know that in the furthest reaches of the third world today, in the most undeveloped countries today, all children are immunized against the basic childhood diseases. And if it's done throughout the world, it becomes normal. And if it's normal, it's your obligation. And if you don't do it, you are being negligent. And with those words ringing in my ears, I went back to the family, and of course, they graciously agreed to have the immunization, firmly secure in the knowledge that this was coming from Rav Eliashiv himself. By the way, I sought Reb Chaim Kanievsky's opinion on this recently. I gave a talk about this subject in a certain place where someone quoted Reb Chaim in a way that did not sound right to me, so I decided to put the question to him. And I asked a colleague of mine who's a very well-known surgical specialist in Israel, practices mainly in Bnei Brak, who is close to Reb Chaim, to go and ask him his opinion about vaccinations. So he went to ask him. This is recently, a couple of months ago, and Reb Chaim said that his family is all vaccinated, his grandchildren are all immunized, and there's no question that this is an obligation. My friend then asked him what should be done with parents who refuse to immunize their children. And Reb Chaim said with a bit of a twinkle, he said he should be given a gutter frusk. Well, I'm not sure he meant that in a practical sense or whether he's issuing psak there. Certainly not. But just to give you the approach of Reb Chaim. Rav Zilberstein was once asked a very fascinating question. What happens if you give the immunization in good faith and the child gets harmed? What do you say then? You gave the vaccine, and as you should, and this child happened to be the one in 40,000. Today, of course, whooping cough, we have a much better vaccine. There was a time when it was not given to children with neurological problems for fear of the complications. Today, we have a much better vaccine. But what do you say to the family? What do you say to the bereaved parents when the child was given the vaccine, or the parents of a damaged child? And the answer that said Rav Zilberstein, again, without going into the details and the context, you will never escape, here's the principle, you will never escape tsoros. You will never escape trouble coming your way by doing something illegitimate. And you will never incur any harm by doing what is legitimate and required. Let me say that again. If you gave the vaccine to your child, as you are required to do by halacha, and the child be harmed by the vaccine, there was trouble you had coming your way anyway. We have to live enough bitachon to know that Hashem's not playing games with you. When you do what you ought to be doing, you eat correctly, You undertake the correct medical screening procedures that you're required to do. You give your children the immunizations that they're required. You will not come to any harm through this. If the child is harmed through the vaccine, you're simply being tested. That child would have suffered equivalent harm, and you would have gone through that trouble anyway. And conversely, you will never escape trouble that is on your way, or a disease, or difficulty, or pain, by ducking out of something that you are legitimately required to do. Again, I'm not sure we can demonstrate this in the world, but we live, obviously, with enough emunah and bitachon to know that that must be true. That is what Rav Zilberstein explained very clearly in another particular case, which I'm not going to go into now. So these are the principles that we live with. We make a normal ishtadlus, we do what is normal. And by the way, this also means we can take some of the heat out of the discussion. We don't need to get personal. We don't, as Rav Asher Weiss said only 2 weeks ago, we don't want people standing up and shouting each other in shul. Completely not necessary. What is required to do, what is normal. This is not people getting hot under the collar, you know, that this is saving lives and that's saving lives, this is endangering. That is true, but there's danger to life here. But the point is that Hashem is taking care of things. You do what you're required. What will be. What needs to be, will happen. Hashem is taking care of people who do what is normal. The question is only your degree of responsibility, and your responsibility in this case is to do what is normal. That is the way we approach all medical things. So this has been a brief summary of our obligation to vaccinate. I've tried to cover some of the basic Ashkofa elements in giving medical treatment. We've admitted clearly that vaccines are not perfect. It's a shame we'll find something better, by the way. Rav Moshe Shapiro used to make the point, which is a very, very amazing point and a very sobering point. We actually don't have cures for any illnesses. Amazing point. Let me say that again. We don't have cures for any illness. Right? We've made incredible advances. And we can virtually eliminate. I mean, hepatitis C, for example, is now a so-called curable disease, but a definitive cure, where we actually switch on, get the body to switch back on what the body has switched off. We don't have, and let me be very clear about this, we don't have cures in conventional medicine, and we don't have cures in holistic medicine either. If we did, then all the people taking holistic medicine, their cancers would be cured. They wouldn't be dying. Right? And those who use Chinese medicine, there wouldn't be people dying of cancer in China. And there are, of course. So do not be fooled that any system has guaranteed cures. We don't have that. The reason for this is because King Chizkiah Melech, hid the Sefer HaRefuas. And Chazal approved of that. There were three things that he did, the Gemara says, that Chazal approved of. Three things he did that they did not approve of. One of the things that they approved of was hiding the Sefer HaRefuas. There was a book called the Sefer HaRefuas. The guaranteed cure of every illness was in that book. And for reasons I'm not going to go into now, Chizkiah hid that book. Hiding the book means, in principle, the cures are hidden. Not just by happenstance and circumstance. Very important to understand this. In principle, the cures are hidden. It's a very embarrassingly candid thing for a doctor to have to admit. I must say, I take this personally. I feel the personal pain of this. But I'm forced to admit that we actually don't have cures. Even with things like antibiotics, which are dramatically effective in certain circumstances, even then you need the patient's natural immunity to cooperate. Any doctor knows that when the patient's immune system is completely destroyed by an HIV virus or by chemotherapy, when they have no immunity left, you can pickle them in antibiotics and they die anyway if they're infected. Right? You can absolutely pickle them in a cocktail of antibiotics, so there's more antibiotic running through their veins than blood. They die anyway. You need the body's innate mechanisms to be helping you. And very, very humbling to have to admit we actually don't have cures for anything. The cures in the Gemara, by the way, we are not allowed to use them, with perhaps one exception. We are not allowed to use the cures in the Gemara. Poskim are very clear about this. We don't understand them. We don't know how to apply them. We don't know the dosages. And because they will not work, we are forbidden actually to try them. I have no idea what they mean. And therefore, that's one understanding. Another understanding is that the human physiology has changed with time, and therefore they don't apply anymore, based on the famous Chazon Ish. This is not the time to go into those. But the point is that although the Gemara does posit certain treatments for certain medical issues, but the Gemara is not a medical textbook, and what those are talking about, we have no idea, and we are explicitly prohibited from using those, almost without exception today, and therefore we are left in a situation where we have no cures. All we have is valid ishtadlus established by time and by the norms of our generation, and that is what we are required to do. And there's no question that immunizing children in our age has certainly become part of that. Not everything has become part of that. Are mammograms required? Probably over age 60 for women. Are prostate screening required for men? Possibly. Colon cancer screenings? Possibly. When things become widespread enough, they become obligations. Up to that point, when they're not widespread enough, you have discretion. You want to use more shtadlists and do more? Acceptable. You want to do less and have more bitachon? Acceptable. But not where things become absolute standards and norms. There one is obliged to do them. And these are the basic halachic and Torah hashkafic concerns when it comes to following the majority of our medical opinion in this generation, following common sense in this particular application, asking rabbis questions that are appropriate to ask rabbis, understanding the learned minority in this area of rabbinic opinion that is not so strongly in favor of vaccinations or perhaps against them. Those opinions are not relevant when we have a majority of senior Torah authority directing us to do this. This really should not be a decision at all. It should also not be an inflamed and personal issue. This is what we ought to be doing. So this has been a brief summary of some of the relevant issues governing medical treatment in general, medical ishtadlus in general, and a summary of our current obligation to immunize, at least against the standard dangerous epidemic childhood illnesses. At some other point we can go into some of the other types of immunizations. Today there's a whole slew of them that are given and often given together. I don't blame parents for looking a little bit scared when those are given to all the children. I'm not sure that all of them are needed. As I said, we talked about here about hepatitis B, which is again drug users get and sexually transmitted HPV. There's discussion here that needs to be undertaken seriously by the Jewish community about how we handle those things. If you live in South Africa, you need to be given tuberculosis. In fact, that's given on the day of birth. But you're living in a society of epidemic where there's an epidemic going on around you. It's not given in the United States. It's not necessary. So these are some of the issues that are important, and I've tried to summarize them as best I can. Thank you very much for listening.